from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 36 for April 3rd, 2007. The Buttonhook Boys. And a very good day to you. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that talks all about Macs and nothing else but Macs. So help us God. Today is actually kind of the second MacBreak Weekly this week. We did a special yesterday. If you haven't listened to it, please pause your recorder and listen to that so that you understand what the hell we're talking about today. Actually, we want to do a real show today because we didn't have the full brain trust on tap. We do this time. Alex Lindsay's back from thepixelcore.com.
Hello.
And Merlin Mann as well, Mr. Hot Dogs Ladies.
Hello.
But we couldn't get Scott Bourne. His internet was down. What is that, Scott? Do you live in a third world nation? Your internet?
Actually, no, John Dvorak got in touch with my service provider and tried to screw up my ISP, but I'm back.
Dvorak.org/blog.
If you lived in a third world nation, you probably would have excellent internet access. It's only us in the States that...
Well, it's the free health care and the ISPs in Iraq that are really the top-notch stuff.
And also joining us from the Chicago Sun-Times and the colossal waste of bandwidth at CWOB.com, it's Andy Iannotko, the man in the hat.
Red 5 standing by.
Blue leader.
Hey, on target.
So let's, and by the way, we are live on TalkShoe for those of you who, I think we've done it once before. I wasn't actually here for this, Alex. You did it. But I like TalkShoe, and I think we'll probably do this in future just to kind of...
I like it.
Do some interactivity. Plus, you can listen to a live stream. And we're going to do TalkShoe, I think, for TWiT, Net at Night, this. And on Thursday, we'll be doing TalkShoe for Windows Weekly. So I'm slowly rolling out TalkShoe throughout all of our properties.
There goes the bandwidth budget, Martha.
For TalkShoe, not for me. It doesn't come me.
That's right.
And we're going to talk to Pedango at some point, I hope, about doing something like this, right?
Yeah, well, we'll be ready for you when that time comes. It's not quite today, so we'll go ahead and crunch what's left of TalkShoe's budget.
All right, I think that's fine. Dave Schuliger's going, oh, my God.
So P1 Red Alert throughout the entire building. Leo's on.
They've encouraged us. They say it's great. We love it more. And they do handle us well. We don't do, you know, it's interesting. Maybe because we're offering higher quality podcasts after the fact. But not a lot of people listen to the live stream. I mean, thousands of people could be listening now, but generally choose to listen to the podcast. Oddly enough.
Those people have better things to do right now than any of us here speaking right
Maybe
now.
That's it.
I was reading something in the Wall Street Journal about this thing called jobs.
Ah. They talk about that a lot in the journal. I don't get it. I think I'm
gonna... So much of it goes way over my head, but apparently there are people who go places and work. So
I'm giving up my journal subscription for Street Sheet, actually.
Street Sheet. That's funny. You made a local joke.
That's very local, and apparently nobody gets it, so...
Yeah, well, you know, I used to be the creative director over at Yank Magazine, so I can get you hooked up with those guys.
Did you really?
Never mind.
That's
Never
local.
Mind.
Did you really?
What's going on this weekend,
Did you
Max?
Really work there? Come on now. Come on, tell the truth. All right. Well, of course, the big story, we talked about it yesterday. We did do a 30-minute special, but we didn't get Scott and Andy's opinions on this. Is that a big announcement? Steve Jobs was in London on April Fool's Day with an EMI. Actually, it was the day after April Fool's Day, but they made the announcement that there was going to be an event on April Fool's Day. And EMI has announced that they are going to remove copy restrictions from their catalog and encode it at a higher 256 kilobit AAC and offer them on iTunes for 30 cents more, 30 pence more, 30 euro pence more. I think everybody agrees. This is great news. You agree, Andy? Is there any negative to this?
The only negative is that about the 30% of the people out there who thought that Steve Jobs' letter was just some big empty scam now have one thing less to bitch about.
That's what John Gruber was saying about Cory Doctorow. He called him the jackass of the week because Cory didn't believe it.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I wouldn't comment on that. But the only negative that I found was that it would have been really, really phenomenal if the announcement was that, well, look, we're just going to say that from now on, it's either copy protected or it's not copy protected. It'll all be the same price. There's not going to be a two layer pricing structure. I'm not sure which one I would choose. If I had to choose between 99 cents for copy protected music that's at a higher bit rate, or 99 cents for the same 128K samples at the same price. Same bit rate.
Well, you don't have to make that choice because it's the high quality is also on copy protected.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That formatted much more betterly in my head. I've only been awake for 11 hours yet, so I've only had 3 cans of Coke. What I'm saying is that it's now there's a value added sort of download, and I'm not sure if it wouldn't have been cooler just to simply say for 99 cents
do it all.
Is not copy protected, right? It's still the same flat rate. Although again, I was really, really pleased that for the extra 30 cents you don't just get this, you know, sort of intangible. Oh well, we're uncopy protected. I can put this on my phone if I ever had an interest in putting this on my $8 cell phone. You actually do get sound quality that's twice as good.
You agree, Scott Bourne? Good news.
It is good news, and I also agree with Andy. My first thought was, well, what are the haters going to complain about now? Then they immediately told me, oh, well, it's not this way in Europe yet. How's that?
Actually, the European Union complained. They filed a suit almost immediately after. I don't know if it's related. But their complaint is that the price is different in different countries. Apple says, well, we wanted to have one European store. We don't want to have, you know, this complicated price structure either. But the record labels force us to have individual stores and charge different amounts in each store. So maybe it's the record company's fault, maybe it's Apple's fault, but the EU is going to ask them for materials so they can investigate.
Well, I don't think Apple has any good reason to want to have prices be different all
no.
over the world. It's way more work for them, so I don't see how they would think that Apple was connected to having all this crazy price structure that happens in Europe.
Yeah, that's clearly coming from the record companies. Yeah. The other response from the record companies, the non-EMI companies was, you know, we were all hoping maybe they would take a cue from this and do the same. And their response was, over Steve Jobs' dead body, they don't want to go uncopy protected. I think everybody will be watching with interest to see if this hurts EMI sales or helps EMI sales.
Well, the two-tier pricing thing, I just want to talk about that because a few weeks ago we were talking about something and I mentioned that they could charge more for something. Everybody thought, well, no, they'll never have a two-tier pricing schedule. Well, now they do. So does this open the door to them creating all sorts of other levels of iTunes music stuff you can get at different prices? I don't know.
Well, you do have to realize that, again, they are giving you something for that extra 30 cents. Also, it's not as though they're certainly saying there's going to be a sliding scale. They're just binary. It's either $1.30 or $1. And what I think is, and also, at least they're giving, is Apple's giving a little bit something back. They also instituted a new policy where if you buy 2 or 3 tracks off an album and you suddenly decide, yes, I want to buy the whole album, you'll get credit for the tracks that you already bought. So I don't know. I don't really like that feature, by the way.
I'm glad Apple finally did that.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who usually buys most of his songs a la carte, now that I will also have the, not only get credit for buying purchases online, but also will have the option in the future, hopefully, of buying any music that I want unprotected, this might be the end of my buying physical CDs, because those are the two advantages that I always had in buying them in forms of plastic, getting it unprotected and also getting a sort of a deal on buying the whole package. If you remove both those things, I might never head to Barnes & Noble or Amazon again for music.
Is the bumping quality enough, Alex, for you to think it's a good deal now?
Oh, yeah. No, it's plenty for what I'd want to do.
The ever curmudgeonly Ben Durbin was suggesting that he was wondering aloud, I guess I shouldn't say he was stating, but wondering whether when we say this is double the bit rate, is it truly double the quality, or is it on some kind of a, you know, like a logarithmic scale?
Yeah, it's not double the quality. I don't even know what double the quality means.
Well, I mean, that's what everybody's saying. I mean, I'm quoting what everyone else
is
saying. It's
double the bit rate, and I think they're using the
double. What does that mean in terms of, I mean, if you're going to try and quantify that in terms of
it's 10% better, 20%. Well, yeah, I don't know if you'd quantify it. I don't think, first of all, it can't be twice as good because it's pretty darn good to begin with. I don't know what twice as good would mean.
All I can say is that when I did my big rip a year and a half ago, finally decided to rip every single CD I had, I started off by trying every single different configuration that I could possibly come up with to try to figure out what format to rip it all in. And I did settle on 256K AAC as my favorite rate is in terms of best quality that I could actually detect with the ears that I was born with, and also having the smallest files that I wanted to deal with.
You could tell the difference.
I found that if I went one notch higher, I could sort of fool myself into thinking I could tell the difference between 256 and 320. It wasn't so much a case of there being a huge difference all the way across the board between 128 and 256, but there's when you listen to things that are kind of tricky, like acoustic guitar, some symphony, some classical music, where you can actually really hear you can actually hear the neighing of the horse that they use to make the bowstring out of, you know, that sort of stuff, you can really hear a bit of a difference. But realize that most of this just comes down to the fact that now, God, a 40 gig iPod costs about as much as a 6-pack of beer these days. In terms of capacity,
you like classical music, Alex Lindsay, and I think you don't like the 128-bit encoding, as I remember.
Where you really, what's happening between the 128 and 256 is essentially you have a lot more data to hold. You know, what we're taking is an analog signal, and we're quantifying into little bits. And there's little stair steps there, and you have more stair steps with the 256. Where that's really going to show up is when you get what as Andy was talking about, where you get strings. Where you get something really soft, where you get things that are really complex, or where there's just not going to be enough to describe it well, and so you're going to start hearing the variations there. The other thing that it's going to make a difference in is that a lot of the stuff is perceptually compressed. So what they do is they say, well, you really can't hear up there, so we're going to throw some of that away, or you really can't hear down here, so we're going to throw some of that away. And so what happens is that if you re-EQ any of the stuff that you're doing, when you listen to it flat, it'll sound fine. As soon as you start, I want to bring up the high notes or the bass some more, sometimes you can hear a lot more of what's not working in a compressed thing, and you're going to hear a lot less of that in 256. So I wouldn't say it's like twice as good, but in those edges, they're a lot finer. And it's much closer to something that I would say, oh, well, I could keep all of my stuff that way and not ever really feel like I need to get a better
something version. To point out, though, is that you'll have half as much room on your iPod because they're twice as big, the files.
But they're not. They're so much smaller than last time
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I haven't filled my 60. No, you're right.
Yeah, when was the last time you sat down to listen to 3 weeks worth of music at one stretch?
Right.
You know?
Hey, just some notes for our talk show audience. A couple of things. First of all, we will be taking calls later in the show in about half an hour. So if you want to get in the queue, please do. Make sure it's a question for our panel having to do with Macintosh stuff. Also want to mention that there is some people who've never used talk show before find the horizontal chat interface, a little disconcerting. There is a standard IRC chat room as well that Eric's has set up at irc.caffeinenet.com. That's irc.caffeinenet.com. CaffeineNet's a very well-known IRC server, good server, and it's a #twit. #twit is the chat room if you prefer to use IRC. But there are plenty of people in here who are joining us, including, I see you, Alex, in there.
I'm there. And yeah. And also, number 7 said, does this mean indie artists will be able to sell the same DRM-free songs even if they aren't, or ain't, I guess, from EMI? I bet you that's going to happen, but I don't know exactly when. Wouldn't you think?
If you read the announcement, you notice that I think there's, 1.25 million songs initially when this rolls out, with Steve saying that by the end of the year, that would practically double that.
Right, where are you going to double it from?
Right.
He must have some deals that are in the works that aren't really signed yet, or else he'd announce it. I don't think he'd promise a doubling unless he knew that was going to happen.
The other thing he made very clear is this is not going to happen for video.
Did he say it wasn't going to happen, or did he just duck the question?
I think people have said that they don't expect
it. He didn't say no. I think he said no, and I think his point was, hey, it's not encrypted in video now, so why would we do it later? Maybe it was on the Apple press release or somewhere. But
yeah, not that I recall, he was saying that he kept coming back to the statement CDs. That, well, CDs have right. never been copy protected, so we're not really changing things.
And there's there's a reason he keeps bringing that up, because he does not want to unencrypt the movies.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Look at my arm. It's being twisted.
Yeah, right.
I guess the thing is I'm not sure whether he doesn't want to encrypt him or whether he just doesn't want to start that battle. I mean, you know, it's one battle at a time. Getting DRM out of the four major labels is going to take a whole year and a lot of luck. Asking them to open up everything would be much more complicated. Right.
As Rufo points out in the chat, that the EMI music videos are not copy protected, but they never have been. They're still free. But we're talking about TV shows and movies, and that's not. And none of this is up to Steve anyway, as is real clear here with this EMI announcement. It's the decision that the movie companies, the TV companies, and the record companies have to make.
Right.
Other stories, unless I want to give you a chance to talk about this, but there are other stories in the news, and we did talk about it quite a bit. Yeah. Other stories in the news. Other stories. There must be some other. anything else?
Well, somebody made a backpack out of an SE.
There you go.
Made wallets out of cassette decks.
That's a big.
It was very exciting.
We're kind of in the doldrums here. One of the reasons that we did a show, Alex Lindsay, was because you were pretty sure that there'd be a new Mac announced today.
There was a lot of chatter on the airwaves that the Octo was near release. Most of us, that would figure
because Leo was with me at the Apple Store Friday night when I picked up my Mac Pro.
I said, buy that quad.
Are you being serious? Did you buy a Mac Pro?
I did. Leo was there. We were both wearing our Twit gear, and nobody recognized us, which I thought was funny.
isn't the Mac Pro at near the very top of the do not buy under any conditions list right now?
Oh. Plus, when you put an asterisk by it when you buy it with Leo standing next to you.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't buy it with Leo next to you. So
Leo was just being very, very smart. What you do is if you want to force Apple to come out with a new thing, get one of your friends to buy it.
Aha.
Apple say, aha, he's been waiting for a year, he bought it, now is the time to screw him over.
Use my credit card, Scott.
Yeah.
So what is that site, Merlin, that we use to monitor the timing on purchases?
It's part of one of the ones I like is from Mac Rumors, and I think it's the Mac Buying Guide.
I thought the iMac was the one that's most dangerous to buy right now.
It's near the top. If you go to buyersguide.macrumors.com.
Yeah, I remember I downloaded a widget, but I somehow have lost it.
Yeah, the one that demanded you go out and buy an Airport Extreme?
Yeah.
Buy now.
Buy now. It's time to buy now. It's never going to get better. Now.
No, I take it back. I stand corrected. So they're putting, it looks like, you can sort. This is cool. Did you see that at the top, Leo? You can sort it by time ordered.
Ah.
So it'll show you the near EOL items near the top.
Well, that makes sense that the iMac would be up at the top because it's after all not it's the oldest of.
You're saying the Mac Mini, the iMac, and the Mac Pro, and the LCD screens. Those are the three that they say are going to be updated soon.
Well, I got two 23-inch LCD screens too, so that's just about
What? You're going to be very happy. That's a great system.
It is, and you know, I have a very dedicated need for it because it's sitting behind my very beautiful Air 2 Audio Arts broadcast console as I speak.
Oh, are you in the new studio?
I'm sitting in the new studio. It's semi-functional.
Scott has kindly invited us to do some of our shows there, so I think we should start doing some Mac Break Weeklies from the stately confines of the Bourne Manor.
Let me get out of my bat cave and we'll get to recording.
I'd really like
to underneath the bust of Shakespeare to get into the place.
That's right. Hey, Alfred.
Quick, well, you know, here's the thing, Leo. We can duplicate the studio on the roof of the condo too, and then watch the game.
That'd be fun. It's fireworks night tonight, Scott.
Yeah, that's good to know since I live 8 feet from the Willie Mays gate.
We actually, one of the fantasies I have, Scott and I were talking, and we went to the ball game on Friday after Gear Media Tech. By the way, great success, Alex Lindsay. Well done on
the
conference. That was really fantastic.
Yeah, we really had a lot of fun with it. I was, you never know how those things are going to go when you do them the first time. And I think part of it is we just got a really, really great crowd of people.
They were good, weren't they? They added a lot to it. And we did Twit there, and that video will be up sometime, you know. One of these.
It's uploading. Actually, we stopped the upload so I could do the Skype right now.
Oh, good. All right. So as soon as we're done,
it's done
with this.
Compressed, and yeah, we'll get it. We'll finish it up. It's getting it into the Apple TV base compression. We'll make it ready for Apple TV in it, and it was like a gig. So we're
you're kidding.
We said, okay, You know, so we backed up and said, okay, let's make one that's smaller than that. So so we're working on that right now.
Well, it's a gig an hour. I guess that makes sense. That's pretty high quality.
It's a little more high quality than I thought was necessary. So we got it down to 500 megs.
And, okay. All right.
And I think it should be.
So we'll do an iPod now. Version and Apple TV slash
it'll be an Apple TV
version.
Yeah, we'll do it. There'll be an Apple TV version. We weren't sure whether we're going to do an iPod version or not.
Okay. We don't need to.
I figured we'll get a video up.
Yeah, any old video will do at this point. Anyway, Scott,
we're going to get a video out of here.
Scott and I had this fantasy. We were talking at the ball game of doing kind of a Friday evening, kind of a salon with twit kind of folks. You know, maybe Alberta could come make drinks for everybody, and we'd stream it live, broadcast it, and make twit be kind of more of an event. Would you guys?
I think it'd be great.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Scott has agreed that we could use his facility. So that's
yes, I think it's sort of like Playboy After Dark, only with ugly people that use computers.
Hello there, Scott Bourne. My, you're looking great tonight.
Yes,
it'd be fun. We could all have martinis. I'll wear my. I have a smoking jacket. It'll be great.
Yeah,
and a pipe.
We're gonna do whatever drinks he's working on for the next show, and it'd be a grand old thing.
And we're preparing the green room. John Foster's suggestion: we're simply going to take a piece of green 8.5 by 11 paper and stick it on the door to the green room. Thus, it's the green room.
Good.
John needs to fire his writers.
The truth is, I have never yet worked in a green room that's actually green. Just so you know.
Well, that's the first thing that my new assistant asked me. She said, "Are we going to paint the green room green?" And I said, "Not exactly."
No. Have you ever been in a green room? No. No.
I don't think there'll be plenty of
green rooms I've been in are covered with graffiti.
Yeah.
Graffiti and have lots of crudité. What is it with carrots? Carrot sticks.
Carrot sticks. Mm.
Yeah.
So Office 2008 for Mac is officially in beta. And it's got something called this. I don't know. This can't be right. Is this an April Fool's joke? The Escher graphics engine? That's a joke, right?
Never heard of it.
It means you keep climbing and climbing and climbing step by step, but you never get anywhere. Yeah.
You never actually finish the article.
Oh, let me get to the bottom of the article. Okay, so it is an April Fool's joke, right? New to the Office 2008 for Mac Mix is My Day, a small standalone app which works like a portal into Entourage's appointments. That sounds good. My Day, part of Entourage. Is there a joke somewhere here?
he's looking for it.
I'm looking for it. Is it real or is it not? Escher sounds like a joke.
I don't know.
You're not going to say, Alex?
I don't know. It looks
serious.
It's Microsoft Word. I don't even.
He doesn't get too excited about things.
I see Microsoft Word news and I go.
You stop reading,
This is
from APC.com, APCMag.com.
If it's a joke, they made a joke that looked exactly like the alpha that I saw a couple months ago.
Okay. So there is an Escher. Why would you put a graphics engine of any kind in a Macintosh application, given the fact that you've got Quartz sitting there next to you, available at any time?
Why would you work so hard to remove menu bars?
Right. Right. I think they still have menu. Oh, no, they have the tool ribbon.
It's this weird thing that it's like a progressive series of ribbons that keep revealing themselves based on the context of what you've just clicked.
Yeah, that's how Office 2007 works for Windows.
I should call it Microsoft Chrome. I watched it over somebody's shoulder a couple of weeks ago on Windows, and I was just like, is there anywhere where you can type letters
actually,
on screen?
Actually, it's surprisingly useful. I have to say I was skeptical, too,
really?
Until I started using it. And the reason is it exposes the functionality that you want as you're working. You're right.
With
it's
buttons?
Big. Well, yeah.
But you want buttons when you're typing?
Well, try it. I was skeptical too, and you must have used it, Andy. You review.
Yeah, I used it for 3 weeks straight as my primary word processor, and after 3 weeks, I still. Now this is maybe because I'm used to the old fashioned, button hook way of doing things, but I'm used to the idea of when I want to click on a feature, the feature is right there, exactly in the same place
on the menu.
So the muscle member can go and get it right.
Yeah.
Whereas when I have buttons that keep reconfiguring themselves, I keep looking up at that toolbar and I'm seeing something that I'm not expecting to see there. I have to readjust to figure out and put my mind into a different sort of mode. Okay, wait a minute. I'm in the fonts mode, or I'm in the page layout mode.
It's modal, which is anti-Mac, that's for sure.
Yeah. The thing I didn't like about the version of Mac Word that I saw a month and a half ago was that I'm used to the, we're familiar with these interfaces where you click on one menu and then the next set of options modify themselves so that now you're only looking at font things. You click on another font thing underneath that, and the ribbon underneath that is now contextual based on what you just selected from the fonts menu. I wasn't able to find that same sort of common sense or that same sort of structure in the interface that I saw a month and a half ago. It just seems as though it's not a step one, step two, step three progression.
Right.
You just seem to see that, well, now there's just so many buttons, they can't possibly put them all in one menu, all in one window. This is just a way of just only showing you 8 or 9 of them at a time. Maybe there's a logic that I just wasn't able to tweak in the half hour, 45 minutes that I spent playing with it.
Well, I remember Office 2007 was like that, and it got better as it got closer to release. So.
This must be something you do have to see, because I could see something like that being useful for something like Photoshop. But I'm just, maybe I'm not trying to be, you know, I guess I am being a bit of a devil's advocate, but when you're doing Word, I mean, maybe I just use Word in a really perfunctory way, but what are all the buttons that you're using in Word?
Oh, you know, it's the view, you know,
for choosing fonts and
fonts
stuff like
and
that.
View and stuff, yeah. I have to say, I think Word 2007 is the Vista Windows version, is really a significant upgrade and really great. And same for Excel. It really exposes stuff. It makes it a lot easier to use.
Well, it sounds like that would be handy in Excel. I feel like in Excel, I spend a lot of time
running around. It's very handy in Excel. Yeah.
Like, I forget what I mean.
Well, that's what
this
is to respond to, is that there are too many commands in these applications now, and you can't find them. And, you know, all their research shows that, you know, most people don't even know these. In fact, I talked to the Office interface team in our Windows Weekly a couple of weeks back, and they said all our research, we kept getting requests from people for features that have been in Office for years because nobody can find them.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I want to know is this Mac release going to be something along the lines of Vista, where it's talked about for 2 years and then it actually shows up?
Is there a release date? I don't see one in this article. I mean, this is the first public
beta. I don't
believe
so. Yeah. And I definitely applaud what they're trying to get to. I mean, we can all remember the horror of Clippy saying, "You seem to be creating a list. Would you like me to format this as a table?"
That was a bad idea.
Have you guys had much of a look at Entourage in this new edition? Is there much new in Entourage?
Look at this My Day window, which looks kind of neat. It's an agenda window. It's not, but it's kind of interesting. By the way, the Escher engine I'm seeing in this article is kind of the Word draw, the PowerPoint. It's the engine that does the art in PowerPoint and Word. Or the charts in Excel. So it's, I guess you have to have your own engine to do that. I don't think Entourage is so much different, but I may be wrong. That was the sense I got. Excel will be considerably different.
Do you guys think this will be the last major Microsoft upgrade to that package for Macs, given the 2 years ago at the Macworld Expo when they walked out the woman from Microsoft and said, "We got a 5-year deal." Remember that?
So, as long as they keep selling copies, why would they ever stop?
It is the number one application on Macintosh.
Well, what just struck me odd that it was just limited to 5 years. Like, why not a longer deal? I mean, it seemed weird that they were limiting it. Yeah. Why even put a limit on it?
That whole thing was
Microsoft thinks 5 years in advance. On that?
That whole thing was creepy with Bill Gates on the big screen, like Big Brother, coming to save Apple with his $150 million investment.
Oh, don't use Stark, for God's sake. I don't know if we had a made-for-TV movie that spread that kind of stuff.
I don't know.
Actually, I think they're going to want somebody from Microsoft around for a while, because this year, of course, it was the singular CEO who flopped his presentation. They always want somebody to look bad next to Steve.
Who was the woman they had 2 years ago with the most?
She was the most unfortunate
name ever, I think.
Yeah, it was. I remember that. And I remember that she stopped just short of using 8x10 note cards on the stage like the singular guy. But
Sig managed to raise the bar there. Yeah.
Yeah, she was nearly that bad.
Like she was doing a report on the solar system in sixth grade or something. Yeah.
Yeah, she stood there and just sort of monotonously, you know, "My name is Karen. I'm from Microsoft. This is a good deal for us. Goodbye."
I wish I could remember her name. It was just.
Well, I think it's really hard for people who, you know, Steve makes it look so natural.
Yeah.
And then you just realize, for someone who's an executive, for someone who doesn't do this every day, you suddenly don't feel any pressure, but there's going to be, like, you know, tens of millions of people listening to what you're about to say. You know, I know when I started radio, the first time I was on the air, the guy flipped the switch and said, "Well, there's about 100,000 people listening to you." And I sat there and stared at the mic. And then I turned it off and went to the next song. It took me a couple times to get to a point where I was willing to, you know, actually open my mouth, you know, and it can be hard, especially when you don't do it very often.
It's like trying to do radio interviews for the first time, and you're standing there side by side with Larry King.
Right.
Well, yeah, Steve Jobs made his regular appearance on Saturday Night Live this week. You want to hear a little bit from Mr. Jobs?
Oh, yeah.
Earlier this week, Apple unveiled the iPhone, a groundbreaking mobile phone, music player, and internet device that sent their stock to an all-time high. Here to talk about it is Apple CEO Steve Jobs.
I'm going to play it anyway because it's just so funny. Who is that, by the way, who does the Steve Jobs? Because he's very good.
Oh,
I don't know.
It's the guy plays drums. I'm having a total brain fart.
He's great, though.
Oh, that guy.
Fred Armisen? Is that right?
I love him. How about Conan?
Your life.
Here's Conan O'Brien's iPhone commercial. How about that one? That might be a little bit more up to date. I'm just trying to get Viacom to sue me. That's all.
Doesn't have room for any more devices.
Wait, let's start over. Here we go. This is the beginning.
Your life doesn't have room for any more devices. Introducing the revolutionary new iPhone from Apple. It's here to set you free. It's a camera. It's a movie player. A remote control, a bottle opener, an electric razor, a blow dryer, a mouse trap, it's lip gloss.
These are all old. I don't know why they're on our list, but I couldn't resist playing them when I saw them there.
But then you get to the last line after they've done all the other stuff. But it makes a lousy phone.
Should we play it? I'll play the last. Play the end. The bitter. Well, let's take the bitter.
And it's a prophylactic.
Whoops.
It's also a hard-to-use cell phone. The iPhone. It's everything. That's a good point.
Conan O'Brien, ladies and gentlemen, watch him on NBC, and please don't sue us. I could play a little bit of that. This is a news program. We're allowed.
That's called fair use, Leo.
Fair use.
We have to comment on it, or else it doesn't count.
Okay, your comments, Andy Anatko, Chicago Sun-Times, an accredited journalist.
Yes. you hear the time when Conan used to do that Year 2000 stuff? That was really funny.
Thank you, Andy Anatko, Chicago.
Cross the I's, we've dotted the T's.
That was funny.
Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you. He's got a press pass, and he's not afraid to use it.
Just call me Scoops.
He does have the hat. Where are the Beatles songs, by the way? We're going to see those anytime soon?
Yeah, Merlin, what's up with that?
Well, according to Steve, apparently, I guess I didn't listen to the whole press conference, but at some point, somebody and one of the reporters asked the very same question. It was on everybody's mind. Well, is EMI's doing this? Are the Beatles included? And they said, no, they're not. And somebody asked how long it was going to be till they would be, or something along those lines. And Steve said, yeah, I kind of want to know, too. So I guess they're working on it. It's interesting. So are they the only major artist that's accepted from this?
I guess so. Well, that's a good question. The Stones for a long time were also on EMI, wouldn't do it. And they caved a while ago. I guess they are the only ones.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but that would be a good thing for them to keep in their pocket for a theoretical
Strawberry Fields
to launch
Nano.
But to put it out in May when it launches, that would be a heck of a buzz if they were to do it then.
I agree. Was there any Mac news at all, or is this just going to be a rehash?
No, there's Mac news.
What's the well? Okay, I got one for you.
Did you see that? There's a guy who made a backpack out of a Mac SE. Because you make noises and stuff, but it's pretty cool. It's an actual SE that he's made into a backpack.
And I bet that's comfortable too. You know.
You know who loves those? The ladies. Ooh,
yeah.
He's got a 19-year-old computer on his back.
that's certainly a way to attract women, I think.
So what is new?
Bare Bones has updated Mailsmith. Still doesn't do IMAP, so I don't care.
I don't know if you guys have talked about this. It's probably not a big deal to anybody on this panel, but as a guy who literally lives across the street from Giant Stadium, I might like to note that Apple's added Major League Baseball to the iTunes library, and today is pretty much opening day everywhere, so
that might
be relevant to the occasional listener.
Is it just highlights, or is it full games?
I don't know the extent of what they're doing. I think it's my understanding that they're going to allow you to get sort of like a daily rewind highlight of the game.
That'd be fun.
And you can get a monthly pass. I think it's $1.99 a month or $7.99 for the whole season or every single game for $20. So it's not expensive.
Yeah, we were actually with the San Francisco Park, you know, we were talking about this on This Week in Media a little bit. You know, I guess they put HD monitors everywhere through the entire park.
That screen's nice, isn't it, Scott? That big screen.
It's huge.
Yeah, the big center field screen, yeah.
But we were sitting there, we called in the guy who's in charge of it because we're all in our 50s plus, so we're all like, we can't read the letters.
But it's all in software, I'm sure. But he was very kind. I mean, he didn't mock us.
He was also about 19.
Yeah, I could see it just fine from here. We couldn't. Let's see.
Remember during the boom, there was some .com that had, do you remember this? There was a thing where you could watch a baseball game in like just a few minutes. They would show just the pitch, just the hit, just the catch. And they had like distilled a baseball game down to like a few minutes. Do you remember that?
That sounds awful.
That sounds really bad because you know what you can't get with that? You cannot get a Ghirardelli hot fudge sundae with that.
Oh, you liked that, didn't you there, Scott Bourne? Oh,
yeah. Oh my good googly moo. Let me tell you something. This is one of those moments in life when it was just tremendously great news that I'm already fat because I don't have to worry about getting fat.
So I'm looking at it's from Instructables.com, the guy who made the Mac Pack. I think we're really stuck with this story.
I'm trying to get you off of that, Leo.
Have you looked at the picture?
You see how roomy it is? It's a Mac. I don't think when I say it's a Mac SE, you guys don't understand. It's an actual computer that he's made into a backpack. It's very clever.
He put the straps on it.
We understand what you're talking about. That's the problem.
We just want to know.
I saw the picture of this guy, and I saw a picture a few months ago of someone who went to some Comic-Con dressed as one of the Chrome Cylons and like the original TV version of Battlestar Galactica. Ooh, I had a picture of that guy seeing the picture of the SE backpack and thinking, what a dork.
It does make you, I guess, a bit of a target because you got to assume that the guy's a computer.
A big target, a big slow moving target.
But like exactly. He's got a computer on his back, and you got to assume he might have stuff in there of value. So he's basically kind of like an overly laden pinata.
I'll say that it would look really cool if you put like if he wore like a big black cloak over it, and it looks like he just had this huge hump.
The eye hump.
Then that would be interesting.
It's my Macintosh. All right.
I give up. I'm not going to try to contribute.
My name is iMac.
Oh, you know what? Can we throw? Can we talk about that Elgato Turbo 264?
Oh, yeah. That's really interesting. It's a USB key that accelerates your H.264 compression. I don't understand how it works.
We should probably just very quickly explain what that is and why it's a good thing. You want to get H.264 it's heavy on the processing end in terms of compressing this video, but once you've compressed it, you've got a really good looking video that is compatible with iTunes. Is that more or less fair, Alex?
Yes. No, it it'll be interesting.
But it takes a long time to test it
because especially this could make a big difference if I'm on the road. What I would notice this for most likely is if I was on the road. And my laptop is not particularly fast at compressing compared to my quad, you know, that I have here. And it'd be great to kind of bump that up when I'm trying to get stuff up online.
So how do they get it? I mean, I guess there's a DSP in it. I don't understand, though, how they must pump the video through the USB port to the DSP, which processes it and passes it back.
It sounds magical. I mean, I don't understand how it would work. I guess I so I'm looking here magic. At really think it's magic. I'm looking at Gizmodo, which has an article on it, gizmodo.com. And it sounds like they're mentioning here this in response to talking about a rumor that this would actually there would be some kind of onboard H.264 encoding in upcoming Macs, and that this is kind of if that does happen, this is a way to go.
Now, Andy, as you pointed out, this product is already out in the U.S. for Windows.
Yeah, ADS Tech already has it. It's packaged with a DVD ripping app and a couple other utilities. So it's obviously something that Elgato's OEM'd. I'm always a little bit curious when I see stuff like this because it's not like it comes with it's any good if you don't already have some sort of video file that needs to be converted. So it only works. It seems like it will only work incredibly well if you've already got a solution that will be converting, you know, DVDs into video files, or if you've got something that will hook it up to what you're doing in iMovie.
Well, I can tell you what it'd be good for. I mean, it's good for a dork like me who's now laden with the chore of trying to create 720p.
Yeah, but how much faster could it be than your Core Duo or your Core 2.
Well, I mean, it's, I assume, well, I don't know how they benchmark this, but the other example I was going to give is that now people who have Apple TVs are increasingly going to want to get their content into a format that'll play on there. And if this works right. The way they say it does,
well, but it won't solve the problem. It'll just make it faster. I mean, I was just today, I was ripping a whole bunch of stuff on my Intel MacBook, and I'm getting conversion rates of about 2-to-1. It takes me about 20 to 30 minutes to convert an hour long TV show that I burned off.
That's faster than mine.
DVD player. Yeah,
that's
and
faster
I'm not
than
sure
my
how
MacBook
much,
Pro.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, no, and yeah, it's very time consuming, and so what I've done is I've kind of shunted it off to my little multimedia Mac, but it's still, gosh, it just takes forever.
I'd have to do a benchmark, but Peter Walton's pointing out in our chat room that the USB is really going to be the bottleneck here. It can only go as fast as the USB can
point, and
out, you know. And
I don't think that's the. I think that it's the compression time. It's much more CPU intensive than it is media speed intensive.
If you wanted to geek out and you wanted to really, if this was something that was very important to your workflow, would you what? Put a card in a MacBook? How would you get around doing this faster?
For a pro or for an advanced?
Let's say for a prosumer. Let's say somebody who makes a video podcast. How would you speed up that process?
I might use if I want to do it on the road. This where this key really comes in for me is I want to do it on my laptop and I want to do it on the road. If I want to do it, you know, in the office, I'm going to use a desktop machine or I'm going to use a couple desktop machines with compressor. If I'm going to do it all day, every day, I'm buy a big rack mount that does basically what this little USB does, but it'll compress to H.264 in real time, you know. And so those are the ranges, you know. The I think that where this really looks like it's going to come in handy, I think once again, is a lot of people doing video on the road. I'm about to do that. I'm about to be on the road pretty much constantly for 8 weeks, and I want to be posting lots of videos. I'm going to put up my own little. Mini podcast and be posting videos of what's going on, and it is slow on my laptop, and so I'm actually really interested in this for that specific purpose.
That certainly seemed like a really big win. My confusion was that when you look at some of the advertising for this, they seem to be marketing at people who have Apple TV, some people who want to make portable versions of their videos for their iPod or their PSP or something like that. And I don't know if it's less useful for consumers than it would be for people like you who, again, have to encode stuff on the fly and get it up on the internet very quickly.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I think a lot of people, I guess they want to have the stuff go faster. To me, everything is unless you really need it overnight, or I mean, really need it immediately, you can do it overnight. So you just, you stack a bunch of stuff up. You know, you can open 10 QuickTimes and set them all up to render out, through QuickTime Pro, and it'll just slowly churn through all 10 of them, you know, overnight. You know, when you get up, they'll all be sitting on your desktop, you know, and so you don't even need compressor to do that kind of stuff. And so I'm not sure if for a consumer, why would I need it to be done in 10 minutes, you know?
Well, because you want to watch the thing you got off of P2P on your Apple TV.
There you go.
Theoretically.
Again, it comes down to, do you want to spend $100? Do you want to have another damn thing you have to find, get out of your desk drawer and plug in just to save yourself 10 or 15 minutes? I should mention that, I'm sorry, when I'm telling you that I'm getting 2-to-1 compression times, I'm not ripping into H.264 only because it takes so damn long to convert into H.264. Right. So that's probably why there was that, oh, wait.
Maybe to end this incredibly boring discussion, do you need to do H.264 to get it into Apple TV? Is that required?
No.
No,
all my stuff is just MP4, yeah.
Yeah, MP4, H.264. I think those are the two formats.
H.264 is MP4. It's a form of MP4.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's one of the methods for
it's pretty. It looks good.
It does look good. And it's a small file size.
It's pretty.
Good looking video. I think it's a good idea.
It's very efficient. You'll get a much smaller file for the quality that you can get. And I mean, you can get a lot of things. There's Peter Walton on the talk she was talking about On2, which On2 does a gorgeous video, but it tends to be a lot bigger than H.264 for the same quality. That's the issue.
We're going to go to the phones in just a moment. If you have a question, there aren't too many people who want to talk, so I don't blame them, frankly. But if you have a question, call in on your talk shoe device. I don't know how it works. I've never done it, but I'm sure you can ask somebody. They'll tell you. Meanwhile, let's take a look at our Mac picks of the week. I don't know if you had prepared one for us, Andy and Notco. If not, you can get a buy.
I do indeed, because I am in that contemptible situation where I have a 120 gig hard drive here in my PowerBook, and I somehow seem to be down to my last 900 megabytes.
Which that's is not bad good on OS X. Yeah,
that's really bad. Not bad. You wind up clicking OK to a lot of very angry dialog boxes from the operating system. And so the go-to utility for this is from Omni Group, a utility called Omni Disk Sweeper, where it's a free download. If you give them $15, they unlock a couple extra features, but it does the really important thing for free, which is to simply go through your entire hard drives, top to bottom, soup to nuts, and just simply list here's where all the big folders are, all the big files are. If you need to figure out, well, geez, I don't really think I filled this up with 120 gigabytes of data, this utility will quickly let you find that. Oh, remember that iMovie project that I did like 8 months ago and is now eating up 32 gigabytes of my space that I totally forgot about? There it is. It's right there at the top of the list. Oh dear. And you just simply click on that, delete it, and suddenly you have your hard drive space back. It's the easiest tool for getting a really good overview of what's on your drive, what's choking it off, and to quickly find, oh, look, I've got the same folder reproduced three different times. You can easily zero in and free up space that you don't need.
And this is from the Omni Group?
This is from Omni Group. If you go down to, I believe it's omnigroup.com.
Omnigroup.com, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Or certainly is, sir.
If you pay the $15, it activates. As far as I can tell, the only big feature you get is an activated delete button at the bottom of the window, so you don't have to go into the Finder to manually delete stuff. That's worth $15 for you.
I like the price. It's $14.92.
Yes, obviously an Italian somewhere on the development.
That's right.
Team.
Yeah,
there's another. I can't believe I'm giving an alternative to my wonderful friends at Omni Group. But there's also a free app out there that a lot of people like called What Size One Word, which does all that for free. It's a universal binary.
Same thing? Really?
It's really functionally very similar to my knowledge. Yeah.
Interesting.
But I love Omni Group.
Yeah, we love them. Yeah, they're good people. Good people. Mighty fine. Mighty fine people. All right, Scott Bourne, you got a freebie for us or maybe something highly expensive?
This is a Zero Alex.
Zero.
Zero Alex. It's pretty much on every Macintosh in the universe. It's called Graphic Converter. A lot of people don't know they have it if they already have it. And if they don't have it, they can download it. And it's free, in terms of demo mode.
Doesn't it still come on all Macs, or is that not the case?
I think it used to. I don't know that it does now. But I know it's only $30 to register it.
I
register it because I use it almost every day. And it, by the way, it does support the Intel Macs now.
Oh, then I have to upgrade because the last time I got it, it's from LemkeSoft. And last one I got was a PowerPC only.
LemkeSoft.com. And you can do a lot of stuff with this. You know, a lot of times you might open up Photoshop when really all you need is the Twain interface for your scanner.
Right.
Or maybe you just want to do a quick slideshow. Or what I use it for a lot is batch conversion. I would write droplets or actions in Photoshop to convert a bunch of images and then go get a cup of coffee. But you don't need to load up that huge RAM gobbling program from Adobe. You can just open this little puppy and do your batch conversion. Works with AppleScript. If you're a real wizard at that, you can make it do all kinds of cool things. And it does have basic color management. It even has ICC profiles. A lot of the stuff that you might use in Photoshop, you can use this $30 program for. And I don't know, since the new version of Photoshop came out the other day, what is it, $1.5 million now for the entire suite? So
more than an Alex, I think.
So I just thought I'd remind everybody, you probably got a copy of Graphic Converter on your Mac. If you don't, you can download it for free from LemkeSoft. And if you work with images, you might want to try it.
I agree. I think it's really a useful tool, even when it was not universal. Now that it's universal, I'm downloading it right now to upgrade. Hey, anybody here taken delivery on CS3 yet? Are we still in beta?
I had to mortgage my house first.
Yeah. It's not cheap to get the whole thing, but you don't have to buy everything, right? The Creative Suite. Can you just buy Photoshop? Photoshop's still like $700, right?
I think Adobe must have stock in BitTorrent or something. That's why they got this pricing structure. They want people to get it from BitTorrent.
So yeah, I'm going to get Photoshop. There hasn't been a new feature in Illustrator that I personally wanted since 6. You know, I mean, there's like two or three, like layers, I guess, would be the one thing. But you know, I find Illustrator to be vexing. I just did a big tracing for some stuff, and you know, I had to trace out a whole thing, and it just made me insane. So so I'm definitely moving. Obviously to Photoshop CS, but I don't think I'm going to get the whole bundle right now.
I still have that cracked bait. I mean, I'm sure I'll upgrade sometime soon. The upgrade for the Creative Suite 3 Design Premium upgrade, $440, full $1,799.
That's a lot of Adobes.
Oh, baby.
That's three times what I paid for my first car, Leo.
Yeah. Well, that was in $1,902. It was a lot. I found on the Daily Gizwiz, we found a cost of CPI calculator from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis that tell you enter a year and you enter the amount and it tells you what it would be worth in today's dollars. And believe me, a $1,700 car in whenever you bought it, 1968 or whatever.
No, actually, that's three times. I paid $500 for a pretty sweet 55 Chevy.
Hot.
And that's back when we were on the gold standard, Lincoln. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, you use Confederate dollars for that. So the web version is $15.99, but I guess...
Gas was only 25 cents a gallon.
That's right.
And everybody had a point.
Give me a discount.
It was simple times.
Jesus.
We made our own food.
Yeah, we did. So you can buy
Andy's sideburns were only down to just below his ear.
My sideburns were in style back then. That's how long ago it was.
Wow. Photoshop.
It was the Zachary Taylor look.
Photoshop full by itself is $1,000.
That's crazy talk.
That's the extended.
What?
Right.
Oh, extended. Okay. So just
the standard, I think, is less expensive.
I don't see a standard.
First of all, you need a physics major to figure out which version you need. I think they've just gone crazy.
They're configurations of. I mean, I'm sorry. Is the actual app substantially different?
Between the basic and the advanced.
I can look this up. Here's
the thing between the basic and advanced. There's a lot of us that used to be doing. We would do visual effects, and Adobe would like of the vast majority of Photoshop users are photographers and 2D designers, and there'd be a handful of us that were doing video, big enough to pay attention to, but there'd be a handful of us who were doing visual effects and video, and we would complain that no one gives us any features. So essentially what I think Adobe's done is said, okay, here's the deal. We'll give you the features, but you're going to have to pay an extra $200 to have them because you're a small subset of our user group. And so we're getting some of the stuff that we want. We're getting 3D models in Photoshop.
That's exactly what it is.
Rotoscoping and being able to import video and being able to clone between
frames. So we don't need extended unless we're doing video.
If you're doing video, the only reason you would need the extended is if you're doing video or you want to add 3D. And here's why 3D is interesting for a lot of people is that I think that with Photoshop embracing this, I think what you're going to see is a lot more people building 3D clip art that is photorealistic. So that basically if you want to add a phone to an ad, to a print ad, you could import it. Then you can rotate it around into the right place and then hit render and it'll just drop it into the frame. So there are reasons to have three. If you're only doing 2D, there are reasons to have that 3D to be able to add that. But for most people, I think that the regular one is probably fine.
So the price on Photoshop 3 is $649 if you don't have the extended. And it's only $200 to upgrade, and most people would be upgrading, right? I mean, how many people buy their first Photoshop? And if you do, boy, must be great. Just that beginning, that first copy. Oh, there's nothing like it.
Another saving grace is they're putting a lot of features into Photoshop Elements.
So right. For most people,
you get 20% of what most people want Photoshop for. If you want to make money with it, then you need to start to pay full whack and finance this thing. But
who uses Fireworks? Is that still a viable program? They still sell it.
Back in the day, back before the standards-based design, back when we cut up our pages by hand, you basically, if you were a kind of a half-assed web designer, you had two choices. You could either do Dreamweaver and Fireworks, or you could do... they used to call it Go Live, whatever it became, and Image Ready. And so you could basically, it was really cool at the time because you could, give it to the admin and they could just go change the buttons by opening up in Fireworks and saving as, and it was nice and easy. I don't know if anybody still uses Fireworks. Just as a funny little orthogonal point, these applications we're talking about, these Illustrator and stuff like that. Illustrator's great. Like when we had to trace the line art for the graphics on my show, Illustrator was awesome, worked great. But we've talked about this a little bit before. I mean, I think it's so funny the way that as much as this technology evolves and gets more sophisticated, I find myself doing stuff like, stuff I would have done in Illustrator, 8 years ago, I now do in OmniGraffle. Because it's just so easy. You just open it up.
I love OmniGraffle.
It's so like it's again. That's a plug for my friends at OmniGroup who do great work. Yeah, OmniGraffle Pro is out of control. It's got a built-in outliner, so you can do mind maps inside of there. People don't know this is in the Pro version, but you know, if I just want to draw a square and put some text in it and have it be a vector, I'll do that.
And that's another application that everybody's got. It comes with, at least it used to come.
I think Scott's onto something with this graphic converter stuff, though, because I mean, you think about. I think everybody uses a different three or four. Items inside of Photoshop, right. But it's you might be surprised to know that, you know, Gaussian blur and unsharp mask and layers, and that's this, it's out there in apps that are not as costly as this.
And the GIMP now is native on Mac and does.
How does that run? Have you? How do you?
I haven't used it. No,
it makes me crazy.
Is it the user interface or is it unreliable?
Yeah, it's just clunky.
Well, get GIMP Shop. It looks just like Photoshop.
It just feels clunky, you know, when you're working. And I have to admit, you know, Photoshop has got a big R&D budget and all that stuff, but it just it feels a little rough.
Hey, it's free.
I know.
That's yeah, what, you know, but I mean, there's no creative problem in the design of that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, no, I was going to say this. There was no creative problem in the design of that user interface for which the solution was not, well, we'll just put another button up there.
Right.
We'll just put another tool palette up there.
Right. That's right. True.
I haven't used it for a year and a half when I desperately needed. I didn't have Photoshop on this brand new laptop that I had. And so I just downloaded the GIMP, ordered my Amtrak train. I had 4.5 hours to do some very simple cutting and pasting. And by hour two, I had sort of figured out how to do what I'd figured out in 3 seconds in Mac Paint 1.0.
Yeah.
It was just, oh, good heavens.
You're onto it, though.
I was on a speed train.
The power, I mean, like the kind of the subtext to all of this that I think is still true is if it's important to you to have a Microsoft shop where all your stuff works together, then that does help. Ditto for Adobe, ditto for whatever it is that you're using. I mean, if you've got a suite of tools that work well together in your team and your workflow, then that's worth every nickel. You know, and some people are really, you know, taking advantage of the ways in which all of these things work together. I think one thing that's interesting is there's so many Cocoa applications that have this sort of stuff that's kind of emerging at this higher level, things that you can do through services that will allow you to work applications together. So I don't know. It's worth the money if you got the money, I guess.
Alex Lindsay, we need a pick from you, my friend.
Okay, so I have a pick, but it's a zero, Alex. It's a zero, Alex. And I have to say this is it's a web app actually. It's not it works on the Mac. And I have to admit that I hesitate to tell people about this because it has taken so much of my weekend this last weekend. I'll tell people what it is, but I just have to warn you.
It can't be worse than Sketch Fighter, which wasted my weekend.
All right, all right.
You didn't have to download it.
Download it. I paid for it.
Yeah, this is just a stupid little web app called Desktop Tower Defense. Have you guys seen this?
I'm downloading it right now. Desktop. I don't care.
I've been reading about the addiction. Everybody's talking
really?
About getting.
What is it?
Oh my gosh! It is okay. So what it is? It's the stupidest little game. It's at handrungames.com.
Okay, handrungames.
Yeah, and I'll make sure I get
the right Desktop Tower Defense.
Yeah. It's
I've been playing this.
Oh my gosh!
It's on my Tumblelog. I play a different one from the same group.
Yeah,
they do a World of Warcraft kind of thing.
So what happens is you put these little these little guys have to run from one side of the screen to the other, and you get to put like little guns and turrets and missile things and everything to try to stop them. And it's one of those things like I thought, oh, this is kind of cute. And then, literally on Sunday, I lost like 4.5 hours. I mean, it was just my mind just became completely set on this because you get to a point where you suddenly think that you're just around the corner from breaking through, and then you just keep on playing.
That's what keeps people gambling.
No, it is totally.
Okay, you get these little defensive towers: Bash, Frost, Swarm, Dart, Squirt.
Yeah. So what happens is the best way to start, in my opinion, is to start with the pellet towers.
Okay.
So you start the pellet towers and you block off the entrance with the pellet towers because the little guys will come out first.
All right. I'm doing
they're
that
wimps
right now. Okay.
So you can't block them completely off. They have to have somewhere to go.
Right. So let me press start here. Here they come. All right. And now, so these things are going to shoot at them?
Yep. You see them getting killed?
Yeah. Okay, those sound effects.
Were you using a dark tower, or what are you using?
That's a pellet tower, but I have a. Oh, they're getting through. Oh, we got them. Wait a minute, one more. Get him, get him, get him.
Ladies and gentlemen, millions of people tuned in listening to Leo Laporte play a video game.
What a fun. Those voices.
Brings you the video game radio hour.
Those voices.
You know, ventriloquism.
We never could figure out how to do video games on TV. Maybe that was the problem. We should do them on radio.
Yeah.
Riveting.
Meanwhile, Leo presses the A button while simultaneously pushing up his little guy towards the tree.
Here they come, they're coming, they're coming. No. His sound effects sound a little familiar. They sound like
They sound like somebody just talking into a mic and then playing with them a little bit.
No, I mean, it sounds like an Ambrosia software game or something. I've heard those sound effects before. Anyway, this is good. This is good. I like this.
It's frighteningly addicting.
I have something on my Tumble log that's you might want to try. Tumbleo.
No, I don't want to try any other ones.
Yeah, you might like this.
No.
It's very similar. I think it's from the same people. It's kind of.
No, man. Just walk away. We always talk about IPH.
You're going to
always talk about I don't play games, not because I don't like games. It's because I like them too much.
This is kind of based on World of Warcraft. You know how you get invaders. So you also place towers. I think it's the same people. And they call them creeps, and they still come in. But they're going through kind of a maze, and you're trying to keep them from getting all the way through the maze. I think it's a very similar idea here. The first level is sheep. But they only have 10 hit points, so. Anyway, I think it's the same people doing this, frankly.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
It's a fun game, as I said. It's a little dangerous.
It's desktop tower defense. A Google will find it for you. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very tasty.
Merlin, I hope you're going to forgive me because I'm going to do a GTD application.
Oh, by all means.
It's free.
Hey, what's GTD?
We're free for free. Goat.
Is that some kind of computer thing?
Goat what is Tower it? Defense. It's a new game. No,
goats out there.
It's getting things done. And as you know, everybody knows that Merlin's folder, 43folders.com, is kind of the headquarters for GTD for geeks. And I've been looking for a good Mac application. And, you know, you use Kinkless, I think, which is based on Omni's Outliner. I've tried them all. This is good. This is free. It's from a Polish guy or a couple of guys. I can't figure it out. There's two names. It's bargiel.home, bargiel.home.pl, and the page is Bartek Bargiel. But I'm fine.
I would Google IGTD.
Yeah, you'll find it right away. You'll find it right away. It is in English, except for the rest of the site is in Polish. But this does a great job. I think it's pretty close to the GTD spirit. It's got the inbox, very easy processing. It's even got a process review button. Has some nice features. When you press the sync button, it'll sync with iCal. And because I have my iCal syncing across computers, it syncs with other computers even. So I run it on all my systems now, and I have a common set of activities that I need to, or actions I need to do. I would be very curious to what you think of this, Merlin, because it seems to me to be pretty, you know, it's brand new, and it seems pretty close to the perfect implementation of this, I think.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, to be honest, I've kind of stayed out of the recent, as much as I've been interested to see the development of an application that helps people do GTD for the Mac, I've kind of wanted to stay out of this because it's just been, there's been a rash of these applications coming out, and some of them are a lot better than others, and a lot of them, some of these have a lot of work in them, go way far out of their way to try and emulate kind of graphically how GTD works, and they do a pretty assy job with it, to be honest. Right. This is one of the first applications I've seen come along that I think is really usable for actually implementing GTD. And the reason it works is it has affordances that keep things simple without trying to do too much for you. So, I mean, the problem, the way that most GTD apps go wrong is that they try to automate all this stuff that you can't automate.
No, this doesn't do that. And that's the problem I had with Kinkless, was trying to get the next action thing working.
Kinkless is a little bit, you know, it's a pretty lo-fi solution. But you point out something I like a lot, which it's worth mentioning. This has Quicksilver integration, which to me is, you know, that it has to start with Quicksilver.
I'm two keys away. I just
exactly. You just start typing anywhere you go, and this goes into an inbox. Yep. It just inbox, inbox, inbox. And then when you're ready to process, you go in there, you select all the stuff in your inbox, and hit the process review button, and it one screen at a time walks you through this.
Also, though, you can with Quicksilver, if you know where the context you're going to put this into, you can begin with a context command
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. It'll put it in the right context. And you can do projects. If you put them in the project name in brackets, it'll do that. And you can add notes. So you can, with one Quicksilver command, do quite a bit.
That's, yeah, I love that. That's something I count on with Kinkless. But, you know, there's another app out there. There's two other apps that are worth mentioning. There's one called Thinking Rock that's really conceptually well done. I believe it's done in Java, and to my mind, it really feels like it's done in Java. So, but it really gets to the heart of the GTD process like no other, because it actually walks you through a task at a time and walks you through the workflow. I find it a little heavy, but if you're just getting started, that's really good. And then another one a lot of people like now is ActionTastic. I think this is very close in spirit to what ActionTastic does, but I personally think the implementation on IGTD is stronger.
I'm pretty impressed, I have to say.
But the thing is, it's doable, right? Like all these,
it gets out of the way.
Yeah, so many of these applications are much more interested in looking like GTD rather than trying to make something that's functionally very streamlined.
Right.
And anyway, I didn't mean to take over your pick.
No, because this is your field, and I'm actually a little embarrassed to be bringing it up, but I've been using it for about 4 days now, and actually,
it's got a nice. I opened it up, and I was like, wow, this is a really an application. It's got ad hoc tagging. It's got autocomplete for when you want to type in emails and stuff. It's got a lot of nice little touches. I think some of the UI could use a little bit of ironing out. I think it's confusing sometimes when like a tab means you're changing modes versus when it means you're assigning,
Well, one thing you'll like, look at the keystroke help, because everything can be done with keystrokes.
Yeah, I noticed that in the menu. That's the pull down menu. I think it's a great looking app. Did you get a sense of what this is going to cost?
It's free.
Free, as in free?
Free.
Wow.
Yeah, they call it donationware.
How's the syncing working for you?
It works well. I get some. I keep duplicating my inbox because I have inboxes on all my computers. That may be a flaw in the way it works, but otherwise, it works fine. All the key stuff that I want is working fine. I just haven't.
That is nice, isn't it, to be able to get around like that?
Yeah. I mean, all my, all the tasks I entered at home are now here at work. But that's because I have a .Mac and I'm doing iCal syncing, and it syncs with iCal locally. So it's using the.
Oh, I see why.
So it's not syncing with itself. Yes. It's syncing through iCal, but that seems to work. Wow. So anyway, I'm impressed.
Got waiting ons. I haven't used those yet, but if you've got things where you're delegating.
And someday maybe.
Wow.
It seems to have a pretty complete implementation. But anyway, I did actually want to ask you what you thought, because
I think it's a great pick. I've been thinking about writing it up because I think it's as these apps go, I think it's pretty strong.
Yeah, it's free, worth trying. What's your pick of the week, Merlin Mann?
Well, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but there's a guy who's made a backpack out of a Mac SE. My pick is not a Mac SE backpack. I love a program called VLC, which is available at videoland.org, and it's an open source video viewing program that will pretty much run anything right out of the box. It's what everybody I know uses to watch any kind of movies on their Mac that are in a digital format. What's cool is that there's a widget that will let you a widget for dashboard that will let you run VLC on a different Mac on your network. So the computer, the old 17-inch, my storied 17-inch PowerBook that I use as a media server, can be running a movie showing VLC, and then back on my MacBook Pro on the other side of the room, I can be controlling stop, pause, forward, back from a dashboard widget.
Very cool.
And it's cool. And I think they're both free as in free.
Yes.
It's not very sexy, but it's if you don't have a remote, this 17-inch preceded the era of the remote. It's very handy.
Created by little French schoolboys, actually. So it's kind of neat.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Le Petit Écolier?
Yeah, little chocolate schoolboys.
little French chocolate boys.
No, I think if you go to a videoland.org where the VLC is, it's the Ecole de something.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe en sûr.
Let's take some calls. You want to try them? And since we're on Talk Shoe, we only have three, which is just about as much time as we have. So we're going to go through some calls here and see what our Talk Shoe listeners have to say, starting with Geek Impact. Welcome to Mac Break Weekly. Hello, Geek Impact. Okay.
Yeah, this is working well.
Impact, coming out to make a backpack for Mac SE.
Paulius, who is in Montreal. Hello, Paulius.
Two for two, Leo.
No, he's there. I hear him. Go ahead.
Hey.
Hey, Paulus.
There you go.
Hey, I have a pick of the week, Leo.
Oh, good. You know, that's the other thing is you guys could do picks of the week, too. Absolutely.
It's, you know, it's a bit slightly higher than a zero Alex, but I think it's still worth mentioning.
Okay.
It's called XSlimmer. So, you know how Macs right now, they're using universal binaries? So this program, what it does, it takes these universal binaries and changes them to only one for one processor base. So if you have an Intel Mac, it's going to take your binaries and slim them down to only Intel compatible.
This is kind of like what you were talking about a while ago, Scott, the one that takes the languages out, only this just takes extra binaries out.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's not free, and I wish it were.
Yeah, it's $12, but I think it's still worth it.
It does the job. So you've been using it, Paulius? I was very nervous about using it, to be honest with you. So you have had...
It works fantastically, and what I like is that it makes applications smaller, so it loads faster. I think I've seen a bit of better performance on loading times.
Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you, Paulius. I'm glad you joined us.
No problem.
It's nice to have you here. Paulius is kind of a regular in talk show. Are you here all the time?
Not all the time, Leo. I'm just stalking you and seeing whenever you're on.
That's why. Yeah. It seems like you're always on because you're always on when I'm on.
All right.
Thanks, Paulius.
You're great. Thanks.
Take care. Really appreciate it. Still in Canada, we've got Michael on the line from Toronto. Michael, welcome to Mac Break Weekly.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Michael.
Sorry about leaving you hanging on that at night the other night. My computer crashed.
That's fine. That happens, and that's one of the kind of the necessary evils of this kind of system is it's all kind of predicated on computer technology, unlike talk radio. What can we do for you?
I just had a question for Alex. I just finished listening to the tweet from GMT, and I was wondering what Alex thought about the new Premiere Pro versus Final Cut. And
did you not get in your two cents worth when we were talking about Premiere Pro?
No, I didn't. I just let Patrick say what he's going to say.
He was saying that he thought it was pretty well. First, he said he hated it. And then he said it was great, so I was confused.
That was confusing.
Yeah.
That was very confusing.
No, I think he said in the past he's really hated Premiere, and I think most of our experience, most people who have gotten into video, who got into video a decade or more ago, had some painful experience with Premiere. I mean, all of us were using Premiere. I mean, that was what you use if you didn't have an Avid, and it was painful, and it got rewritten in Premiere Pro, and it is significantly better. I will say it's definitely... a lot better than what it used to be, and I think I'm excited that it exists because I think that I'm excited when Apple gets pushed a little bit from what they have. The integration between the Adobe apps is getting a lot better. Overall, it's not like a bunch of people this year are going to go, oh, look at Premiere, and they're all going to switch from Final Cut to Premiere, because Final Cut, while all of us have complaints, it's really not that bad. You know, I mean, it does everything fairly well. I think that what will happen, though, is there's a trajectory. So if Premiere keeps on showing really, really great new features and Final Cut doesn't keep up, then you start to see some erosion of the user base. I think it's hard for us to make too many decisions about the Final Cut Pro Studio and compared to the Adobe one, because Adobe just has announced a lot of what's going on there. I think they've announced some of it. And we're right before NAB, so we have to wait for another couple of weeks to see if Apple reacts. We're hoping to see. Generally, when we see a new Final Cut Pro is when we get to NAB. So if something comes out in a couple of weeks, then we'll have a bunch. It'll be easier to compare. It'll be closer to apples and apples, a new version of each. And if not, then we'll be able to make that comparison. So, but I think that the for us the big thing is as we do production and we do. You know, we have to worry about, 30, 40, 50 episodes a month. The big issue that we have with a lot of the Adobe stuff is that the project file isn't XML-based. So it's not a text-based file. And the reason we need this is because we like to automate lots of stuff, and we like to be able to send out to a, say, go change this stuff without ever opening the application with Python scripts with Apple.
So it sounds like the Premiere is not aimed at the Pro market that Final Cut is.
Well, I think it is. I think Apple kind of got into the XML thing. I'm not even sure why they put XML in, to be honest.
But it makes it much easier to stream it to other applications. I mean, isn't that how it works in the 3D world?
Well, the XML, a lot of us have been really picky for a long time. Anytime someone's worked in a really large pipeline, what they want to see is a text-based file format that they can you know, manipulate without actually opening the application. Shake was like that, or Shake is like that. And so,
in Final Cut's case, is it an edit list? Is that what it is? An EDL?
No. It's not just an edit list. The entire project file is an XML. Wow. So what it means is that everything, if you can figure out, like if the lower third says Leo Laporte on it, we can, if we find Leo Laporte in the XML and we change that to Merlin Mann, when we open up Final Cut again, it'll say Merlin Mann.
Wow. It's pretty robust.
Everything is in there, you know, and so that's what is super powerful in our eyes. And until Premiere really did that well, like really had a text-based format where all the information was exposed, I know for us, we wouldn't do that. Now, I think that we're one, you know, typically, and Leo will point this out, is we probably exist in 0.5% of the editing market. Most editors don't care about that at all. Right. I think they should care about it, but I don't think that they do. And, you know, mostly they just want the new shiny buttons and things that'll make their life easier. And I think that Premiere, you know, I think that the great thing is if you're getting Premiere, if you're on a PC, you have a very, you know, a very good app that will do just about everything Final Cut will. But I don't see us moving anytime
soon. One more call before we wrap it up. David's on the line from Northridge, California. David, welcome to Mac Break Weekly.
Well, hello, Leo. Hello, gentlemen. How's everybody doing? I hope you guys are doing great.
We're great. Thanks for calling in.
My question is, I'm off from work today, so I'm just so lucky to try talk to you for the first time. This is something really neat. I hope to use it more.
Well, I hope we're now starting to use it for, this is the third show. We of course do Net at Night. We did Twit, and we're going to keep doing that, I think. And we're doing Mac Break Weekly now, and we're going to do Windows Weekly on Thursday, same time, 4 p.m. Actually, not the same time, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. East Coast.
Yeah, that's great, because I'm actually going to try my podcast on the talk show, too. I think it's really good to be interactive.
Your handle is Wedding Podcaster. You do a podcast about weddings?
Yes, I do, Lynn. We spoke a couple years ago. We actually met at PME. My podcast is BehindTheWeddingMic.com, and I talk about wedding entertainment.
That's so cool. That's great.
So it's just a great market. Be inspired by you and listening to your shows and all your hosts and other gentlemen you talk to. It just gets me all excited about doing the podcast.
Yep. So my question is,
my laptop, I'm sorry?
I was just saying it's a great medium. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, yeah. My question was, last fall, during this winter, my laptop screen actually popped. You know, we have all the static electricity, and I actually touched my laptop, and my screen just totally burned out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
You know, my question is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I think I know what your question is going to be, and I think I have an answer for you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So now that I'm shopping for a new laptop, I've always been Windows-based, but I've heard so much about Macs and, you know, a laptop Macs, and I want to go dual-boot. You got to help me with this one, because it's a really big jump in price.
Boy, you called the wrong guys. Anybody want to recommend a Windows machine? No, I think we all say Mac, right?
I'd get an Acer. They have a box you can get.
You know,
I think they're about $40.
Justine was so funny because she scared the heck out of me I realize now it was April Fool's. She bought a Sony Vaio. She changed her blog. You know how she's holding the Mac? And it was a Sony Vaio. I thought it was pink. I thought, did she, like, just because it was pink, buy that? Well, you can get a pink Vaio if you really want, which would look good at weddings, I think.
I would lean toward a MacBook. I mean, it's if price is your primary driver, and you guys can
tell
me if you think this is wrong.
Very affordable.
I mean, it's so funny. You guys were talking during Twit about how Dell is shipping their boxes with Linux on it now. And just for fun, I sat there and did a price comparison. And I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know enough to talk about this stuff in any intelligence. But yeah, you can get cheap Windows boxes.
You can get a $600 laptop, but don't.
Yeah,
don't.
Right. And I would have to say the people I know who have MacBooks have been pretty happy with them. As Leo has pointed out, you take a hit on in terms of the video quality. You're not going to be able to run full screen video in your keynote presentation, but I think you could be really happy with a MacBook with as much RAM and hard drive space as you can afford.
Andy, you're probably one of the only guys besides me who uses Windows on this show.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's surprising. They're making some really nice Windows laptops at the student level these days. I was going to say that if you really are desperate to spend the least amount of money and get the most bang for the buck, HP makes some really nice little notebooks that are not designed to be overtly stylish. They're not designed to be overtly powerful, but for your to deliver the four food groups of computing, you really can't do better than this little $730 notebook that that HP sells through Office Max, through Best Buy, through just about anybody.
Yeah, you know, Dell also, the Inspiron E1505, which is a Core 2 15-inch display for about $700, is also a pretty surprisingly good deal. Running Vista.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to help you edit video or anything like that. But once again, as your basic toting around machine, it's actually fairly good.
And of course, you have to account for any kind of, if there is any kind of software that you're using for your podcast and your other work that you'd need to replace, I guess you need to factor that in as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you're just going to do something like, you know, email, wait for the iPhone.
Zing!
We got the gratuitous iPhone plug-in.
I think it's Guide to the Galaxy. You just carry it around with you. It's all your reference books. You upload your articles through it.
That and a towel.
Don't panic written on the outside of it.
Guys, I think we're going to wrap this up. I will say that Talk Shoe was a great success. It was really, really fun to do it live, to watch your chat as we were talking and to take your calls. And I didn't, you know, I announced this morning on Talk Show. We didn't make a big deal about it, but I think we'll continue to do these on Tuesday afternoons in Talk Show. So just watch your Talk Show schedule if you'd like to participate. Talk Show, TalkShoe.com. Want to thank our guests from The Merlin Show at TheMerlinShow.com and, of course, 43 Folders, Merlin Man.
And thank you, Leo.
It's great. This is your two days in a row now. You're probably getting pretty burnt out.
Let's do this every day.
I already do. Today I already did 8 podcasts before I even got on the line with you guys. And if you think I'm joking, I'm not. Scott,
you did eight podcasts?
I did 8 Gizwizzes. And then, of course, yesterday we had 2 specials. We had this special and we had a Security Now. And that's my day off. So I'm.
Do you just get delirious and start confusing where you are?
Yeah.
I mean, do you?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I have to go and play desktop tower defense. I can't take it anymore.
I'm actually, you go through the drive-through window, you wind up having an 8-hour conversation with the teller.
Tell me what you think.
Now, the great thing about virtual networks is that, but what do you think? I'm on offline.
Sir, here is your change, sir.
It is an occupational hazard.
Please pull up.
That's Andy Yannacco, the great Andy Yannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. You can also catch his online work at CWOB.com, the colossal waste of bandwidth. Always good to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us, Andy.
Always a slice. Thanks.
Yeah. And Scott Bourne is now I don't know what site to promote anymore. PodcastingTricksOfCourse.com. Apple Phone. What is it? Apple Phone?
AppleFoneShow.com. We'll be living it up a little bit tomorrow, next week or so. We're going to put the first show up.
That's exciting. So it's great to have you. And we
thank you.
We'll talk to you again very soon. Alex Lindsay
from
PixelCore.com. Also PixelCore.tv, where people have been asking me, Alex, I think maybe we need to cross promote or something, but where MacBreak is, but that's where MacBreak lives now.
MacBreak is and we'll put some more on the show so people can get an idea what's going on.
Yeah, pixelcore.tv is where MacBreak lives. And MacBreak Weekly, and this probably is part of the confusion, lives right now at twit.tv. We could cross post this if you want, however you want to do it.
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah. That'd be fine.
That'd make it a little easier for people to figure out what the heck is going on. I'm Leo Laporte. We remind you that twit.tv is the home of this podcast and many others. Even if you're listening on TalkShoe, you'll hear a high quality version later today as soon as I compress it and put it out. Look for Twit Video from our show on Friday, any day now. Alex will start uploading it as soon as he gets off the Skype here. And we'll be back on TalkShoe on Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for a live version of Windows Weekly. That'll be all Q&A, so get your Windows questions lined up. Thanks for joining us. Have a great Mac week. We'll see you later.